Welcome to episode 503 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard.
He's Josh Pollard. And I'm Richard Gunther. And this is the show that puts you in control of your favorite movies, music, shows, and games. Dude, welcome back.
Dude, you act like I've been gone for months.
Well, a month. So it's good to talk with you again. And people have missed you.
Maybe. We don't know that for sure.
All right. Well, while you were gone, we had the opportunity to bring in one of our favorite guests, James Montemagno. And I don't know, I think he and I did an okay job. We went a little bit long because, you know, we both like to talk.
You guys did a great job. But yes, you do both like to talk. So.
Well, maybe you'll keep us on schedule.
We'll see about that. There's a lot to catch up on and a lot of listener feedback. So let's jump right into that. They were sent in to us at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. And the first one is from Brian, and he addressed this message in two separate parts, the first part to you and the second part to me. So how about you read the part to you?
All right, that sounds good. He says, interesting way to start out, actually. Speaking of digital copies, I do not own an Apple TV hardware device, but I do own a Roku Ultimate. I was so happy to install the new Apple TV app on Roku and test it out. Well, it works great. I'm now able to access all my digital copies in my Apple library. Yes, I'm hooked up with Movies Anywhere, but I redeemed all my digital codes in iTunes, so I get the free 4K UHD updates. With Paramount, MGM, and Lionsgate not joined yet, I had no way to watch those studios' movies on my Roku device until now with the Apple TV app. A quick question, though. Even with the new Roku hardware updates just announced and released, the difference now comparing Apple TV hardware and Roku Ultimate is the Roku doesn't have Dolby Vision and Dolby Atmos? Question mark?
I did a little bit of digging on this one. The Roku Ultra does support Atmos through as pass-through, but not Dolby Vision. It definitely doesn't do Dolby Vision. Right now, if you want Roku and Dolby Vision, you have to have one of those fancy Roku TVs that supports Dolby Vision.
Now, you said Roku Ultra. He was talking about a Roku Ultimate. Are those actually, like, is there an upsell that he would need to consider if he wanted to receive the Atmos support? Or is that just are we like conflating words here?
There is no such thing as a Roku Ultimate.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So then let's assume that he has the Ultra, and in theory, he should be able to get Atmos. So if you're not getting it, you may want to check in your audio settings. It could be something that you have to explicitly set up. And in many cases, on many devices, it is.
Right.
And then he passes to you saying, Josh will probably be happy to read this next part.
Yeah. So he says, Santa sent me a message that we'll be getting our very first Xbox system this Christmas.
Ooh.
That was him saying woo. Although I'm pretty excited about it too. He says, I have three daughters aging from 8 to 14 years old that love to play Minecraft and Roblox. Could I get a couple of your best recommendations for Xbox games that you think they would like playing? Also, please list off your daughter's favorite Xbox games as well. So my kids don't really play many games. They do play a little bit of Roblox on the computer. And they'll play a little bit of Xbox with me. It's actually my youngest daughter, the six-year-old, that likes playing the most. And we mostly just play speedrunners together, which is a fun 2D, just running around racing game. It is fun. I would absolutely recommend it. The other games that I would recommend, and this is harder because, like I said, my kids aren't playing games much. So I basically just looked at what's out there. Of the games that I've played that I would recommend, I would look through the 11 billion Lego games, find a Lego game that's for a property that your kids like Maybe they're into Harry Potter. Maybe they're into Marvel. Maybe they're into Jurassic Park. Like, there's basically Lego games for practically everything. And get one of those. They're a lot of fun to play. They're not super complicated. They can be played multiplayer at the same time. So a lot of fun there. Overcooked is a game I've talked about a lot in the past. It's a fun cooperative cooking game that's hilarious. A couple of games that I don't own, but I think could be interesting to your kids, would be the Just Dance games, where it's literally a dancing game. They play music and show how to do dance moves on the screen, and you're supposed to do the same thing. They can work with Kinect, or I believe they'll also work like holding a phone in your hand so that it knows that your hands are doing the right things. Another game that I haven't played, but I've heard a lot of really good things about, is Zoo Tycoon, where you get to build zoos however you want, and that can be a lot of fun. And then, of course, we talk about it all the time, check out Xbox Game Pass. It's a fantastic deal. The library has over 100 games in it. There's going to be a lot of games in there that you might not want your kids playing, but there are parental controls built in to the Xbox if you want to put some limits on that sort of stuff. But for $10 a month, it's hard to beat Game Pass, especially when you're kind of just tossing an Xbox at your kids and want them to have fun without spending a bajillion dollars on games.
Yeah, it's a good idea. All right. Well, as always, we heard from Captain Lon Paw. You want to get this first one and I'll sure. follow up with the second message? Yes.
Yeah,
we have two messages from Lon Paw.
Right. Well, we did take a week off. So sure. He says, hey, just a little something I wanted to share with you before the next show. You can bundle ad-free Hulu with Disney Plus. First, you must subscribe to ad-free Hulu. This must be done first. Then sign up for the bundle on Disney Plus using the same email address. I did this, and then a few hours later, I received an email from Disney Plus telling me that each month I will receive a $5.99 credit towards my bill. So I have it all under one account, one bill, and now I guess I get ESPN for free. Yay? Yes, yay. ESPN Plus is awesome. He says, very nice on Disney's part.
Yeah, that's really cool.
It is really cool. In fact, I've heard from other people that this will even work with Hulu Plus Live TV. As long as you're using the same email address, you'll get the discount.
Wow. That is really cool. I haven't read about that anywhere.
Well, I think people are trying to keep it a little bit low key in case it's a glitch. I don't know.
Okay.
So he continues on. Speaking of Disney, I keep hearing all the talk about how The Mandalorian is so great, or how all these 90s shows are amazing, yada, yada, yada. The real win here is The Muppets. Okay. He says, an ABC comedy docuseries that was the best show. ABC stupidly canceled it because people complained that it wasn't appropriate for little kids. It wasn't supposed to be. It was a show for those of us who grew up on Muppets and wanted to see them again, but in a way we could relate to. They took it off Hulu over a year ago, and it hasn't been on any service since. I started watching it during our morning breakfast / TV routine to wake up. Neither one of us can stop laughing at this show. It is so good. Tell a friend. Well, I guess we're telling a few thousand friends now. Speaking of good shows, I heard you mention some show called The Masked Singer on the last episode. Well, I made the mistake of checking that out and ended up binge watching the first season in 2 days. Now I have to wait week to week, which is driving me nuts. Thanks, guys. That's your fault, Richard.
It's James's fault.
Oh, it is James's fault. You're right. Well, it's definitely not me. I wasn't on that show. Oh, and here is your crazy Lon Paul fact. I keep forgetting to find odd things in entertainment. Muppets in Space, like one of their best movies, not on Disney Plus.
Totally one of their best movies.
Something about Jim Henson Productions and leadership issues. That movie ended up falling under Sony.
Oh, that's unfortunate. Because, yeah, that movie is hysterical.
I don't know that I've ever seen that one.
Oh, yeah. It's good. You should check it out. It just happens to be in my library. All right. Well, we have another message from Captain Lon Paul. And in his best pirate voice, he threatens a long one. But I'm going to dramatically simplify this because there are a couple things that I really want to call out here. And we have a lot to get into in this episode. So to summarize, Paul shared his thoughts on HBO Max, the DC Universe, Xbox All Access, streaming show syndication, and Surface Phone. Lots of information that we talked about in the last couple of episodes. There are two things I want to call out. We've talked about a podcast about The Office, and Paul says, The Office Ladies is the name of the podcast with Pam and Angela, the actresses that played Pam and Angela, doing episode-by-episode breakdowns. I would recommend it to any Office fan. They're only 4 episodes in and have 2 interviews, and they do amazing breakdowns. I've watched the series a few times through already, like 4 or 5 over the years. And no, it's not even my most watched show. And they point out things I've never noticed or thought about. That's really cool. This is something I might have to check out if I end up watching The Office again. But to do this, I feel like I'd have to watch the whole series again, you know?
Right.
Oh, wow. That's tempting. All right. So he also says, I have a question I can't figure out. The Good Place and Superstore, both from NBC, are on Hulu. So why do I have to use NBC's terrible Xbox app with ads? You know how I feel about ads, to watch The Blacklist, or I think Blacklist. Their app streams in such bad quality, I doubt it's even 720p.
Wow.
And the answer is because past episodes of Blacklist aren't on Hulu anymore. They're on Netflix.
Right.
So you're not going to find current episodes of that show on Hulu either.
Yep. Yeah. If you search for Blacklist in Hulu, it says watch it with live TV. No, that's not what we're looking for here, Hulu. So, yeah, unfortunately, that's when they sold the rights to Netflix for.
Because licensing rights. It's always the answer to the bad news, right?
Always.
All right.
The reason why we're going to end up with 100 different streaming services over the next year.
Oh, but the cord cutter advocates say the choice is good.
All right, well, that is it for our feedback this week. So we're going to get into our news now. And the featured story is one that I've been living with for the last week or so. You've been living with for the last week or so. We've talked about a million times on this podcast. And we both almost forgot to even put it in the show notes.
Because it's just a part of our lives now.
It is just a part of our lives now. It is that Disney Plus launched, which Paul kind of spoiled for us earlier in the show. But yeah, Disney Plus, it came out last week. Holy cow. Is it basically everything you had longed for?
It is. I don't know that it's everything. I know that sounds like ridiculous. What else do I want?
But Muppets in Space, apparently.
Obviously. But it is really impressive. They have, as we knew, just a ton of content out there. I think the app overall is pretty well organized. I don't like the side navigation. That actually confuses me a little bit, because if your feature blocks at the top of the app are highlighted, then you can't go left to the side navigation. You have to go down to go over to the navigation. And I think that's kind of a failure there. But overall, I think it's really good. They ton of good content. I hope at some point in time they add more of the kind of behind the Disney scenes documentaries. There are a couple out there. I own a bunch of the things that they put out on disc over the years, and I'd love to see things like that added, like the story behind how they created Epcot, or the when they decided that they wanted a second park, and the background to buying the land and getting the park in Florida, stuff like that. I think there's a lot of Disney lore that people who are paying for the series would probably be interested in. So I want to see more of that. But from a you know, from a legacy and even somewhat current content perspective, I'm blown away by everything that's in there, particularly since I'm paying under $4 a month for it.
Right. Yeah, it's been pretty well received in my house also. I've threw on, of course, a couple of the Star Wars movies just to check them out in 4K. Didn't watch them all the way through. I just wanted to see it. They look
great.
Holy
crap. First Star Wars, A New Hope in 4K.
Right.
Now, you know, there's only so much you can do with that, but it looked phenomenal compared to any copy that I've had.
It looks really good. So that's all there. My 11-year-old is going nuts over Disney Plus. It's all she has watched since we got it. So it's been a really big deal. I did sign up for the bundle. I was really, really, really waiting for the bundle so that I could also get ESPN Plus. So now I get my daily NHL recap show from ESPN Plus and Disney. It's great. It's really, really great. I'm so happy that it's available now.
Yeah, that's very cool. Now, they certainly had a lot of anticipation about this because they've been talking about it for a while. They did a hard launch with everybody all at once, and their servers took a bit of a beating on day one, and it probably didn't help that day one was a snow day in some states because of weather conditions in the Midwest. So I suspect that a couple of people had some problems with it. I had problems with it, but my problems were largely related to my own stupidity. I did get a couple of 404s every once in a while or 503s or whatever it was that caused Wreck-It Ralph to show up on the screen and suggest that he broke it. But you'll get a kick out of this. You know my whole thing with using a different email address for every service so that I can track and potentially stop any spam that ends up deriving from someone sending out my email address or selling my information. So I did that for Disney Plus. That was what, 2 months ago that we signed up for Disney Plus? Something like
probably
that? So I end up going to log in and I forgot that I'd done that. So I'm trying to log into Disney Plus with my Disney account. And that's a little complicated because I'm a DVC member. So I have multiple accounts that are kind of tied together through the Disney single sign-on. And I lock my Disney account.
Oh, jeez.
So I eventually realized by looking through my email history that, oh, I used a separate email and I signed in and so be it. I was in. Now, one thing that I have noticed on Apple TV, and I don't know if this is a problem on any other device, is when you go into the different sections, some of the sections aren't filling out for me. So I'll come up, I'll go to, say, a list of all, I don't know, movies A to Z, and I get A, nothing else. Nothing else fills out. And then I can use that sideways navigation, kind of the filters, if you will, along the top to get to the different categories, and those fill out completely. But there's a bug. Again, maybe it's only specific to Apple TV, but there's a bug. Like, if I want to go to the HDR 4K movies that are on the far, far right side of that thing, I have to, like, navigate over there. And when I get about two-thirds of the way over, it resets and goes back to the beginning.
Oh, jeez.
And then I do it again, and it gets one further and resets and goes back to the beginning.
Oh,
and then
gosh.
I keep on doing that until it finally lets me land and navigate through the last section. I can't believe they haven't fixed this yet. I can't imagine it's just something specific to my installation. That's absurd.
Right.
I could try, I guess, uninstalling and installing, but yeah, kind of annoying. What did you think of the authentication process on the big screen?
I'm trying to remember it. I think it's now been a week and
I know, and a lot's happened. So I'll remind you here, you had the option if you wanted to authenticate with your signed-in tablet or phone. So if you had Disney Plus already installed on a tablet or phone, then when you go to your big screen, you could select authenticate from my phone. And all it did was bring up a message on your phone because it found it locally,
right,
through the network and said, do you want Family Room TV to access Disney Plus?
Yes, that was really nice.
So, so easy.
Yeah. I mean, no one likes typing email addresses and passwords with a remote control. So yeah, it was very much appreciated.
Yeah, they did a really good job there. You didn't have to go into some extra menu and say authenticate device. It just found your local device and gave you the option right away. That was brilliant.
Yeah, it was really cool.
So yeah, overall, I'm impressed. I think we spent some early money wisely on this one.
Yeah, I would say. All right, so let's move on to some other topics. And unfortunately, this one is not nearly as happy news as the Disney Plus story. That is Hulu, for the second time this year, once in January and now coming in December, they are increasing the cost of their Hulu Plus Live TV service. In January, it went from $40 to $45. And in December, it's jumping up to $55 per month for their live TV service. And a lot of people are really, really upset about this.
Yeah. Well, no wonder, right? Because this is such a bait and switch. This really annoys me because the whole promise of getting all of these channels from these alternatives to cable stations has turned out to be a farce and unsustainable. So all of the providers, this isn't something that, you know, Hulu's just screwing people over. All of the providers of services like these have had to raise their prices over the last year or two.
So how is that a bait and switch?
Well, I feel like because the promise was that you could get all of this for less than you're paying for a similar package of channels from your cable company. And I think that is no longer as viable an argument.
I did a little bit of digging. I checked my local cable provider.
Okay.
This would still be less for me than subscribing to my local cable provider.
Okay. For the channels that you're getting?
Yeah. I'm not going to, but it still would be less for me. I also looked at Comcast, since they're the number one cable provider in the country, and I'm pretty sure still less than a comparable package from Comcast.
Hmm.
I mean, yeah, it sucks that the prices are going up, but they're going up for the same reasons that cable subscriptions are going up. The content providers and producers want more money for the content that they're producing. So they charge the cable companies more and they charge these streaming services more. I mean, didn't we expect that these prices would eventually go up? We didn't really think that Hulu Plus Live TV would stay $35 a month forever, did we?
Certainly not forever, but $35 to $55 in 1 or 2 years is a pretty hefty increase.
I mean, it is.
It suggests that the business model that they laid out initially wasn't viable, or that they didn't anticipate that costs would go up for them, or, as I am more apt to believe, everybody saw that the other companies were coming in low, they need to come in low, and we'll just raise it on them later.
Well, I think that is probably more likely the case. And when Hulu made this announcement, along with that, they said, we have to make a profit on this. Maybe at $35 and $40 and even $45, maybe they were losing money. And
right.
Would you, I hate to make this type of argument, but I think it's a valid argument. Would you rather pay a little bit more money and have a service that continues to exist, or pay less money and have the service go away like PlayStation View?
Right. Right. No, it's a good point. It's a good point. And certainly we, you know, some of our listeners have been through that also with the HD Home Run Premium service that we've talked about in the past. Also, you know, also one of these things where they ended up just dealing with licensing issues and carrier issues. And so this is all complicated. I get it. And this is still in its infancy. And that's probably the thing that we need to remember. We're all pioneers here, right? If you're straying from the common methods of getting content, then stuff is going to change pretty rapidly over these early years in this.
Yeah. You know, I was kind of impressed that one of the things that they said as part of this announcement was maybe consider whether you need Hulu Plus Live TV all year round. Maybe you have Hulu Plus Live TV because you're a huge college football fan. Mm-hmm. So you sign up for it in September and then you drop to regular Hulu, you know, for $6.99 or $12.99 or whatever the prices are after college football is done. Like, that's a really reasonable plan and something that a lot of cable providers don't give you the flexibility to do because they require subscriptions, you know, long-term yeah. contracts and stuff. So you do still have options here. And then, of course, the other options that we should mention are some of the competing services. YouTube TV, perfectly viable solution. It's a really good service, offers very similar things, very similar channel lineups. It's got DVR and all that stuff. It's $50 a month. It'd save you $5 a month. Or you could switch to Sling. Sling ranges from $25 to $40 a month, depending on which channels you want. You obviously can't switch to PlayStation View because that's going away. And some of the other competitors, like the service from AT&T, actually cost more. So you're probably not going to switch to those. But you do have a lot of options here.
Yep, definitely options. I think I would tend to recommend Sling because I tend to believe that they're more likely to stick with this than Google is, but that's just because I'm tired of getting burned by Google.
That's a good point. And the other interesting thing there is that Sling has, I don't think they've ever changed their rates, ever.
I don't know if I'm, maybe, yeah, I don't know that I believe that.
Maybe it went up by five. Maybe it used to be that one of the plans was $20 and now it's $25, but.
Yeah, I don't remember. Okay.
Yeah. All right, let's move on. Amazon, who just loves to release thousands of products a year, it seems, has yet another new product that somehow they didn't have ready for their giant announcement of products a month ago. Whatever. This one's weird. It's kind of weird. The Fire TV Blaster. It's an IR blaster that works with your Echoes. This is kind of weird. So the idea is, if you're already using your Echo devices to control your Fire TV, well, with an IR blaster, you could have it control your TV's power, your AV receiver, maybe your cable box, maybe your sound bar. Most of those things take IR control. Why not use, you know, very, very tried and true technology that we've been using for decades at this point to control our devices, and now do it all through the Amazon ecosystem so that you can use all of your Echo devices to control everything with your voice. So you need some certain devices here. You need a Fire TV stick with the voice remote, or a Fire TV stick 4K, or a third generation Fire TV, and then of course any of the Echo speakers or smart displays, and then this TV blaster thing.
Yeah, it's an interesting idea. I don't know how I feel about this. Not because I think it's a bad concept. I think it's pretty clever. In fact, one of the things that just drives me crazy with, for example, the TiVo integration that I have with my Echoes is that I can tell the Echo to go to a specific station or whatever else, but it still can't actually turn the TV on. So this potentially solves that problem, particularly in my kitchen, where I'm, I don't have like a universal remote or right. something like that, right?
You're not going to set up a Harmony in your kitchen.
Right. So this solves that problem. And I think it's a really cool idea. Here's what concerns me. Configuring this stuff in software can be fairly complicated. Writing the software to do this and presenting it to the user in a way that's easy to use is fairly difficult. Harmony has been trying and largely failing to do this well for literally decades now.
Right.
And now Amazon, which is known to make some of the worst app experiences on your phones and devices, is going to try and pull this off. That scares me.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you make a really good point about the kitchen. I'm still not one to use voice in the living room when I'm watching TV.
Agreed.
Like never. But in the kitchen,
I use it to turn it on and that's it.
Yeah. In the kitchen, when you might be watching the news or something like that while you're cooking and your hands are a mess, voice makes total sense.
Yep.
I like that idea. That makes a ton of sense. Well, if you want this, the TV Blaster itself will be $35, or you can buy a pretty sweet bundle that includes the Blaster, a Fire TV Stick 4K, and an Echo Dot, so everything you would need for your kitchen, for $79.99. That's a pretty sweet deal. And all of this ships December 11th.
Very cool.
All right, so let's move on to some audio news, and we're going to stick with Amazon here for the next couple of stories. Amazon, we pulled the link here from Thurrott, and I think he has a really great title for this. Amazon quietly unveils, we're going to say the name, Alexa-based home theater solution. Sorry, I don't care. I don't care. I'm going to say it just that one time. So the idea here is, and this is really smart, this is going to sound similar to solutions from other companies that we talk about a lot on the show. You can take various Echo-based speakers and connect them to your TV, essentially. So get a couple of the Echos, get maybe the Echo Sub. I would highly recommend getting the Echo Sub. And pair these all through your Amazon Fire TV Stick 4K, a third gen Fire TV or a second gen Fire TV Cube, and you've got a essentially wireless up to 2.1 sound setup that probably sounds a lot better than the speakers in your TV.
Mm-hmm. But there's where it falls apart for me, is that 2.1.
That's the maximum?
That's the best you're going to get out of it. That's really frustrating for me. I wish that they could at least maybe support 4.1 or something like that, where you could have rear speakers as well. This configuration seems like, you know, this isn't for your... I don't like that they're calling this home theater. This is not home theater. This is better sound for your TV using Echo devices.
Yeah, I think that's a valid description of it. You're right. You're absolutely right. Maxing out at 2.1 is not home theater.
Now, the Echo Studio, I imagine this is going to be like damn good sound for your TV with Echo Studios. If you were to have an Echo Studio on, say, each side of your television, that's kind of powerful.
Remind our listeners what the Echo Studio is, because this is a new device, right?
It is a new device. So the Echo Studio is one of the newer Echo speakers that they announced at the fall event, and it is intended to compete with the likes of, say, I don't even know if they still make it, the Google Home Max, or probably more familiar to most people, the HomePod. So it's a very high-end audio speaker, roughly about the size of the HomePod, maybe a little bit smaller, including a good subwoofer, some mid and high range speakers in it, and supposedly does a very good job of projecting that in multiple directions. Now, What I don't know is if it's capable in and of itself of producing audio that has discrete stereo channels. So, you know, this could get expensive because I don't remember what this was priced at, but
$199.
Okay, I was going to say $179. So, you know, this is kind of like using a Sonos One or two Sonos Ones. That sounds so weird. With your TV.
Yeah. Yeah, Sonos was exactly the company that I was thinking of when I saw this. Because yes,
absolutely,
you can get a Sonos subwoofer, you could get a couple of Sonos Ones. You can do all of this with Sonos. And it's really convenient, but it gets real expensive.
Mm-hmm.
But with Sonos, you can go, I think you can go all the way to 5.1, can't you?
Yes, you can get 5.1. But the way that you do that is that in the front, you're using one of their Sonos soundbars.
Right. Which is like $800, I think.
This is not an inexpensive endeavor.
No.
I think you can get the Beam now for, if I remember correctly, I think maybe it's $400. So it's a lot cheaper than the old bass and the old initial soundbar that they had.
Okay. Yeah. And you're right. The Sonos Beam is $400.
Interesting. It's an interesting solution, particularly if you're steeped in the Echo ecosystem and you like the sound that those devices produce in your space.
All right, next story from Amazon. I think this is our last story from Amazon. We always joke on the show that Amazon has like 14 different music streaming services.
Well, they don't really.
One of them, I think they have three. One of them is a free music streaming service that up until now has been limited to those Echo devices. It was ad supported, of course, but it would only play on your Echo devices. Well, Amazon is finally making it so that you can listen to that on your phone or your tablet or your television, because they're bringing the free service to Android and iOS and to Fire TVs. So still all of the normal limitations with the free streaming service, in that it has ads and that, you know, how and what you listen to via playlist and stuff, all of that is still limited. You can just listen to it on a lot more devices now.
You know, I used the Amazon free service for quite a while before I decided to subscribe to their music service, and it's pretty good. I mean, you don't have the most recent hits. You don't have the deep catalog. I think we looked at the numbers on this. I think it's like 10 million tracks versus the 70 or whatever that the other service has. But overall, this is just great news, because it means there's more ways of consuming music that you want to hear, like on-demand music, because you can get on-demand music from this service. It's not just limited to stations and playlists, and not restrict you to just, you know, like doing it on the web or something like that. So
right. This
is good stuff. And similarly, Spotify has announced that their free tier is now going to play on Sonos speakers. Again, you had to have the paid tier to be able to use Spotify on a Sonos system, and now they have expanded that. You may remember Spotify made their free service available to apps a while ago, and now it is also available to Sonos speakers. So just, you can find it as an option, as one of your music sources, and you can add it and get the ability to listen to Spotify stations, Spotify playlists. Now, because it's the free tier, it's not going to be the highest quality that you can select with Spotify Premium. It's going to include ads, and the music that you have direct access to, like it may play any song from the catalog available through the stations and playlists that it has, but you'll only be able to direct access certain songs. Again, a limited library of direct access music. So who knows? Maybe I might have to sign up for a new free Spotify account since I ditched my paid Spotify account to try it out.
But
I don't know.
But you're doing Amazon Music now, right?
I am. I have Amazon Music. Edward has the Apple Music subscription. I may end up just ditching Amazon Music if I can at some point, and I don't know why this is the holdover for me, but if it's possible to have one service on everything, meaning Apple on everything, then I may end up ditching my Amazon Music service. And the only way that that is going to happen is if the Apple Music service actually comes to the Google devices the way we had kind of like a sneak that might be the case, right? Like it was showing up there as a service, even though you couldn't select it a couple months ago. So if that actually comes to pass, then I'm likely to just drop Amazon because then I could actually have one service on all devices.
Right. That would be nice.
Yep.
All right. Let's move on to some gaming news. So in the last week, Microsoft had their huge XO19 event over across the pond in the UK, and they had a massive Inside Xbox event from the first day of XO19, and they promised it would be the biggest Inside Xbox that they've ever had, and it was probably the longest. It was actually kind of big, but they told us ahead of time, don't expect any Scarlet announcements or anything like that, and we didn't really expect like a new trailer for the next Halo game or anything like that. So what did we get? Well, we got a lot of game announcements. We're not going to go through all of those. You can check those out in a lot of different other places. But we did get some updates on Project xCloud and some more updates for Game Pass. So Project xCloud is, of course, the game streaming service that Microsoft is working on. Closest competitor being Google Stadia or PlayStation Now, and they've said that it will definitely be launching in 2020. It's currently available for some users in test on Android devices only. That's going to change. It's going to come to Windows PCs. It will eventually come to iOS devices. But maybe the biggest announcement was that they're increasing the library from 5 games to 50 right now. So, just before Stadia launched and was launching with 12 games as a absolutely ready for you, we're taking your $130 service to pay to play 12 games.
Mm-hmm.
This service was giving you 50 to play.
Nice.
And isn't even ready. So, yeah.
Well, you know, they're saying that it's going to have 50 games in 2020, right? So who knows how many Stadia may have by that time, but you bring up a good point about the Stadia launch that I think we'll probably talk a little bit more about later.
Yeah, we will. But just to be clear, no, I'm not saying 50 games in 2020. I'm saying 50 games now.
Oh, okay.
For the people testing it now.
Okay, for test. Okay, right. Got it.
Another thing that they haven't directly said, but it sounds like they will be doing, is if you are a Project xCloud member and a Game Pass subscriber, that all of the Game Pass games will probably work through xCloud also, which would be really awesome. But they've really been hinting around at that. It's not actually confirmed yet, but it sounds like it's probably going to happen. So that's pretty much it on the xCloud stuff. On the Game Pass side, we're always talking about how great of a deal Game Pass is. $10 a month gets you over 100 games. They announced, I lost track, like I think another 50 plus games coming to the service this year and into next year, including some really, really big ones, especially for people who have been missing out on some bigger games from Japanese studios. They announced that basically every single player Final Fantasy game going back to Final Fantasy VII will be available on Game Pass in 2020. All of them. That's 9 games all available. They're bringing 3 of the Yakuza games over. They're bringing 2 of the older Kingdom Hearts games onto Game Pass. in addition to a whole bunch of other games. So Game Pass just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger and a better and better and better deal.
That's pretty cool.
And if you aren't subscribing yet, they've got a really sweet deal going on right now where you can get 3 months of Game Pass Ultimate, which includes Game Pass on PC and console and Xbox Live Gold. You get all of that for $1. That's an awesome deal on its own, but it also includes 6 months of Spotify Premium, some extra Discord benefits. I think there was even something else. Like, it's a ton. There's absolutely no reason for you not to sign up for Game Pass right now if you haven't done it yet. Next up, just a quick one from us at the DMZ, sort of. Black Friday video game deals. It's kind of hard to find them all. If you're looking for a game, it might be cheap at Walmart, but it might actually be cheaper at Target. Game consoles, same sort of thing. Different stores offer different bundles and everything. And there's a lot to parse through. Well, fortunately, there's a site called Cheap Ass Gamer that does all of the hard work for you. And what do we mean by hard work? Well, spreadsheets, of course. They've got an amazing Google spreadsheet that basically lists every game and how much it's going to cost at all of the different stores. And then they do the same thing for all of the consoles and even for movies. So we've got a link straight to the spreadsheet right at the DMZ for you to check out. If you're looking for games, you absolutely want to use this spreadsheet to make sure that you're getting the best deals possible.
Yeah, cool. Very cool. And I mean, when you say every game, man, this thing is comprehensive. I mean, it even includes like the home versions of Wheel of Fortune and Jeopardy. So,
right. Basically, if it's shown up in a Black Friday ad, it's on this spreadsheet.
Cool.
So, yeah, it's really nice. All right. In November, Microsoft also released another sort of big update for the Xbox One. And the biggest feature, I think, is that they are now natively supporting the Google Assistant. What that means is you can set up, go in and turn on some settings in the Xbox and then use any of your Google Assistant speakers or apps to control the Xbox. So you can turn the Xbox on and off, you can launch games, you can play and pause video, all of that type of stuff. And we've got links to all of the documentation for this to see all of the different commands. You can do screenshots, all of that stuff. And so that, of course, joins Amazon's voice assistant, which launched earlier this year. So now you can use either of those to control your Xbox with your voice.
Nice.
Yeah. The gamertag stuff that we had talked about earlier this summer is now generally available if you want to use the same gamertag as somebody else, but tack some numbers on to the end. You can do that. I don't know why you'd want to do that, but you can. I think it makes the gamertags look stupid, but you can do that. They're also supporting more alphabets, like some of the Asian alphabets, so that you can use those types of characters in your gamertag. So that's good to see. They've added some text filters with varying levels of filtering so that when people send you awful messages on Xbox Live, some of the terrible words might be filtered out. You can turn that on or off. That's a good thing to see. And then another cool one, voice to text dictation. So this should work in like sending messages and things like that. This is kind of more of an accessibility thing, I think, than anything. Although I could see a lot of people using this just because if it works well, it could be way faster than typing out a message on your Xbox controller.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised that this didn't already exist.
Right, because it's built into Windows, isn't it?
Yep.
I'm asking the wrong person.
No, I'm pretty sure it is. I mean, I know that certainly through my Mac, I can dictate, and I was under the impression that you could do the same thing, whether it was, you know, through Cortana or however it was branded. I thought you could do the same thing in Windows.
Yeah, I think you can. So it does seem a little odd that it's just now coming. But so that's all there now. If you've got an Xbox One and it's been plugged into the internet, you've got this update. So go and check out those features if they sound interesting to you. Because most of the other features, you're not going to notice unless you go looking for them. Which makes sense. I mean, we're 6 years into this console, right? All right. And then the last gaming story is, and we mentioned this a little bit earlier, Google Stadia launched this week. And that means they've billed your credit card, the $130 for the Founder Edition setup, and have started shipping out controllers, started sending out invitation codes to people, and
started launching games, right? That might be the best way to put that.
Right. It's been a rocky launch. Now, on the good side, what most people who have used it have said is it actually works, and it works pretty well. Now, when it comes to 4K, like The Verge said, it's got 4K, but it doesn't really look like 4K. Not exactly sure what that means, but I think we can all kind of take some guesses. So it does look good. Like, you know, I was watching an IGN review and they were showing some Tomb Raider clips and it looks really good. And as long as your internet can hold up to, you know, 15 to 20 gigs of data per hour, then cool. But there have been so many launch gaffes. We mentioned the ridiculously tiny library of 12 games at launch. But there's been lots of other technical stupid things, like maybe you already have a Chromecast Ultra. Well, too bad. It doesn't work with currently existing Chromecast Ultras. It eventually will, but they haven't said when. Did you want to use this with your phone? Well, you can't do it wirelessly. You want to do it with your Windows PC? Can't do it wirelessly. You have to plug the controller in. All of these things will eventually get updated, but when this service was announced months ago, I think most people assumed, well, when you take my $130, I'm going to have all these features, right? No, you're not getting a whole bunch of features. There have been issues with people reserving usernames, and like there have just been tons of problems. And what most people are saying is, this doesn't feel like an official product launch. It feels like a beta that we had to pay a bunch of money to get into. And we've had paid for betas before. It's fine to do that as long as you call it that and you set people's expectations appropriately. Mm-hmm. And Google didn't do that here.
No, and this is really unusual for Google when they're launching hardware. Usually when they put hardware out, it feels complete. It feels like a reference design. That's the expectation that customers buying hardware from Google have.
And I think most people are pretty happy with the controller itself.
Well, sure, but it depends on all of this software to make that work properly.
Right. And that's where most of the problems are. So it does sound like a good service once it's going to have some games, hopefully, and once they kind of figure out the rest of these issues. But it is Google, a search engine and advertising company. It is not a gaming company. So we'll see if they can figure out all of these issues, get the agreements that they need to build up this library, and actually make a good gaming service. Because right now, it's only kind of mediocre, which is kind of what we expected.
And you remember what I said about feeling burnt about stuff from Google earlier this episode. This is one that, unless you are a hardcore Google person, that is your ecosystem, all your stuff is Google, I would hold off on this.
I would absolutely hold off on this. Wait until at least early 2020 before you decide to put money down on this.
I would say wait a year and and see if it looks like it's going to survive much longer. Okay, well, that does it for our news. So let's go ahead and catch up on what's been going on in our respective entertainment centers. And I suspect you may even be more up to date on stuff than I am these days, Josh. I don't know, but I have not been watching as much as I normally would. I had a very, very busy last week, and this week has been, I've been preoccupied with stuff this week. So let's dive in. As far as hardware, no new hardware. So it's really just what I've been watching. The Conners, Superstore, Modern Family, The Good Place. Wow. There's one episode left on The Good Place. And I don't even know where to go with that. It, I feel like they have a tall order to wrap this up in a way that does justice to all of the goodness that they presented in the first three seasons. The season's been getting better, but it certainly hasn't lived up.
I would completely agree with everything you said there.
So we'll see how that plays out. I am behind in This Is Us and New Amsterdam, but I did watch a little bit more of This Is Us. I watched another episode of Jack Ryan season two. I finished season two of Grace and Frankie. And with the Apple service that's now available, I've been watching The Morning Show, and I'm fully caught up on The Morning Show. The Mandalorian. No spoilers, but here's the thing.
Nope.
If you're at all interested in watching The Mandalorian, you need to do it now. You need to watch it as soon as you can, at least the first episode, because spoilers are everywhere.
Yeah, they really are.
And that's really annoying me. So there's been a lot of reviews about, yeah, it's good, it's not good. I think it's very enjoyable. I like the short format of the shows. I think it makes it very watchable in short bites. It's a different format for most Star Wars family stories, perhaps except for some of the animated stuff. But I like it. I recommend it. In case anybody didn't know, there's been a lot of news lately, political news. So I've been watching a whole lot of television to keep up with that as much live as I could. And along those lines, last week, the team that puts on the Talking Feds podcast that I am such a fan of was in town in DC last week. And I was so excited to actually have the opportunity to help produce last week's episodes of Talking Feds. We did six episodes during the week. I only helped with five of them, and I'm really looking forward for those to be out on the feed. They were incredibly interesting with amazing guests, including congressional reps, past solicitors general, past White House counsels. I mean, amazing guests on this show. They were really, really cool.
So, that's amazing.
Yeah. If you don't already subscribe to Talking Feds and you're really interested in what's going on in the political landscape, this is a show you should probably be listening to. And then finally, I watched the movie. I can't believe I had never seen this before. Watch this on Disney Plus, The Rocketeer.
I've never seen it either.
It was really fun. It was an enjoyable, fun movie. And I'd never watched it before. And here's the sign that Disney Plus is successful. Edward went looking for movies in it all on his own.
Whoa.
Right. Like, it was
just go to the iTunes store and buy it.
No, right. It was just easy. I said, hey, there's going to be all this Disney stuff. Check it out when you get a chance. And I came home from being out over the weekend, and he's watching some movies on Disney Plus. So must
awesome.
Be it. That's an endorsement right there.
Right. That's a big one.
All right, Josh, how about you?
I've been, boy, it feels, when I look at this list, it looks like I've been watching a lot of TV. It's probably because I have been. I'm almost done with season 7 of Homeland.
Wow. So
I'm really pushing through on that. I'm all caught up on The Good Place. Like you said, I'm all caught up on Mr. Robot.
I am not.
Wow. What a season. Holy cow.
And we only, I believe, have one more episode of that after.
Oh, boy. Flash,
is that right? Maybe three. I think there's only one more. I think I am two behind, and then there's one more.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's crazy. I don't know how they're going to wrap this up in one more episode of that show either. Hmm. Interesting.
All right.
And then at your recommendation, I started watching a little bit of Treadstone.
Yeah.
I think I've watched two or three episodes. This takes place in the Jason Bourne universe.
Mm-hmm.
That is an interesting show. Mm-hmm. It is not exactly what I had expected, but it's good. I think I am going to stick with it, but I was trying to burn through Mr. Robot and Homeland before getting back to that. And then, of course, The Mandalorian, like you said. I've been watching that with my oldest daughter. It's really good.
It is.
It's really good. The production value is super high. I'm not the biggest Star Wars fan. It's been a really good show. A really good show.
Cool.
A little annoyed by the weekly releases, but whatever.
Yeah, so that's actually something that's interesting, right? All of their new shows, they're coming out one episode at a time. So this is not something you can binge if you're in from the start.
Right. And like you said, you kind of need to be because of all the spoilers.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, a quick question for you on Treadstone. I don't know if so much a question, just as a thought. One of the things that I've had a really hard time with that show is keeping track of it all. And this is kind of because they're following a bunch of different people, but right. also because I feel like they made the mistake, if you will, of casting lead characters in key positions that look alike.
Yes.
They have like three fair-skinned, bearded white guys with right. light hair and that are all different people.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And one of them is at a different point in time, but he looks just like, right. I don't get it. It is a little bit confusing to keep track of it all.
I thought it was just me. But
no, it's not just you. It is definitely not just you. Obviously, lots of hockey and football, lots of college and NFL football, and pretty much watching all of the Penguins games lately. And then in gaming, I was really excited for The Outer Worlds to come out. It's on Game Pass. I'm not loving this game anywhere near as much as I had hoped that I would.
Ooh.
It's really, really hard. Like, it seems like ammo is way too hard to come by. The enemies that you have to fight in some of these early encounters are really strong. I feel like it's so hard, I feel like I'm doing it wrong. And I shouldn't have to feel that way about a game. So I haven't even touched it in at least a week. And that, for me, my track record means that I might never end up going back and playing this game.
Wow.
And I was really excited about it. So obviously always playing lots of NHL did that. And then last night, Joe DiStasio and I decided to check out World War Z. It's a game after the movie. So massive hordes of zombies, you know, crawling up each other to get into buildings and stuff like that. But it's more like the old Left 4 Dead games, and really like the Left 4 Dead games. Four characters trying to escape zombies. It's got some RPG mechanics built into it where you're leveling up your characters, leveling up your guns. It's fun. It's not the greatest game ever, but it's in Game Pass. And if you've got some friends to play with you, it's good for at least, I would say it'd probably be good for at least a few nights of gaming with some of your friends. I don't think it would be very fun on your own, though. But doing this sort of game with some friends can be a whole lot of fun.
Hmm.
So that's it for me.
Cool, cool. All right. And that wraps up our news. Two things before we're out of here. First off, we have a new guest post out on the site about controlling your AV gear with a universal remote. Our listener and reader, Robert Spivak, who is an installer of like DIY products and pro products in the smart home space has a wealth of knowledge about AV equipment. And I had asked him if he could provide us with a guest post. And wow, this, I don't know if you've had a chance to check this out yet or not, Josh, but this goes deeper into the workings of universal remotes than I'd ever thought of before. I learned a ton from this post.
Yeah, it is a very in-depth post.
So if this is something that you're interested in, if you're curious about, you know, why you might pick one remote over another or one technology over another, I think this is a really good way. It's not a primer. This is a deep dive into the types of universal remote control systems that you might want to think about for that. So that's one thing. The other thing is we're doing something a little bit different this year as we come up on the holidays. Every so often, we get listeners ask us about our devices that we use or the devices that we would recommend to people. And so we've decided just before we get to the holidays and Black Friday to pull all of those recommendations together in one place. So we're going to have a new section of the site coming out called DMZ Product Picks. It'll be on the main menu, and it's going to look a whole lot like a store because it essentially is listings of the products that we've looked at or were reviewed or used in our own homes and would recommend to our friends and, of course, to you, our listeners and readers. So you can check that out, and that'll be out on the site in a day or two if it is not already there when you hear this.
Yeah, I'm excited about this new section because we get asked all the time about what products we're using. And now you'll be able to really easily see, like, every product in here is being used by at least one person at the DMZ.
Yep.
So I'm really excited. It's been fun to put it together, and I think it's going to be really useful for all of you out there. All right, well, that's going to do it for this show. If you want to get a hold of us, all of our contact information is on the website, but we're on Twitter at Richard Gunther, at Josh Pollard, and at Digimedia Zone. Richard, you've also got another podcast called Home On. What's going on with the latest Home On?
I do, and I'm so excited. Our newest episode coming out is with Agnes Lorenz, and she is one of the people who heads up the Smarter House. You may remember that we met with these folks at the Z-Wave Pavilion. I believe it was early last year. They're the makers behind the Zoos line of Z-Wave products, and their store is all Z-Wave all the time. If you're into Z-Wave, this is where you want to go to find Z-Wave products. So we had a really good discussion. It was a long discussion, so I'm trying to edit it down into something a little bit more compact, but I think people are really going to enjoy it, and she was a fantastic guest.
Awesome. Well, the live show is taking a little bit of a hiatus, but it should be back soon-ish. And when it does, you know, we'll, of course, be tweeting about it. And we will be back on our normal nights, Tuesday nights at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. But that's going to do it for episode 503. He's Richard Gunther, and I'm Josh Pollard. Thanks for listening to Entertainment 2.0. Adios.
Goodbye.